Isabella Williams, Reel One. And if I could ask you, first of all, Miss Williams, about your family background.
Yes, my family are basically London, and I was born in Shropshire just towards the end of the war. My father had been invalided out of the war, and as he was a scientist, they picked him up for chemical warfare. And he was in chemical warfare at Porton Down in Wiltshire until he retired. My mother was a school teacher, and she developed TB very early. And so my father had, and those were days before there was any national health or anything like that, and when TB was just coming into the doctor's interest. And my mother was used very much as a guinea pig, and my father was always absolutely livid about it, that she was used on for a lot of the treatments that were beginning to come in the 20s. And finally she died, but by that time it had wrecked my father's finances, because she was either in Brompton Hospital or else in Ventnor in the Isle of Wight. And we got our travel bag early, because we just got shunted from grandparent to grandparent. And I was lucky, because I finished up in a farm on the Isle of Wight, to be somewhere near my mother. And I got very good training there on milking cows and dealing with hay and pigs and poultry and all that kind of thing. When I was about 7, I think, so that was quite good. And then when my father went to Porton Down, we took up residence in Wiltshire, and we sort of circulated round Salisbury, depending on what kind of housing we wanted at the time. And so we both went to school in Salisbury, my brother and I, and I was lucky, because being the oldest one, I must admit my father spent his money on me rather than on my brother, and I always felt rather guilty about that, actually. But I went to Godolphin, but he was very tough with us when we were young, because when we were 6, he said he wasn't going to give us any more pocket money, and if we wanted it, we got to earn it. And we always had pocket money. We were either chopped wood or did bits of gardening or looked after babies or did something or other. And then when we were 14, he said exactly the same thing. He said, I've given you your summer holidays for 14 years. You can stay at home in the summer if you like. If you want to go away, you've got to pay for it yourself. And we neither of us ever stayed at home. Looking back, it seems rather a comic organisation, but at the time it seemed quite sound. The University Women's Camps for Schoolgirls, and I went over several bits of this country with them, and several bits of the continent with them. They were very reasonable, and I finished up as assistant chaplain, for some obscure reason. But they were international, which meant that you quite early got a sort of flavour of other countries. And I always enjoyed them. They were great fun. And one or two of the people that one met at them, one went on meeting later in life. I suppose probably the most exciting one was the last one. We went to Holland, a youth hostel with an international camp. We had Russians and Swedes and Danes and French and us. And we got parked in a youth hostel, and then the war loomed. My father sent violent telegrams, but nobody took any notice of. And then the Dutch army took over the youth hostel and chucked us out into a field. They put up a standpipe and some tents, and they did say that we wouldn't be molested, but they thought the best thing to do was to get out as quickly as possible. And so our leader went to see if she could fix up something, some kind of transport to get us back to England. And I went down for the local mayor to see if I could get some sort of help with the feeding proposition, because we had about 25 kids and we didn't know how we were going to get the food. But I must say the mayor was very good. And ultimately we got out. We went to, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Havre. It can't have been Havre. Must have been one of the Dutch ones anyway. And we had to wait 24 hours for one of the very last trains to come through from Middle Europe. And we finally sailed with about 1,200 on board, a boat that normally took about 600. And we arrived in Harwich about midnight. We then had to keep, there were trains waiting for us. And we went down to Liverpool Street Station. And I think every Jew in London was on Liverpool Street Station, waiting to see if any of their relations had come through. And the trip had, as far as I was concerned, certainly, had an absolute bonus, because we had we must have had about 10 English, I think, and six of them, they were all teenagers, and six of them were blind. And when we got turned out, these blind kids were so worried that they were going to be a nuisance, and here we were in trouble, and they were blind, and they couldn't see, and they didn't know what was happening. And in the end, what happened was that we put these six in the front of us, and we went through every obstacle because we had these blind kids with us. And they were so proud. I could still remember the expression on their faces. That here we were in a crisis, and they pulled their weight. It was a wonderful trip.
So this would have been right on the outbreak of war, would it, Miss Williams?
Yeah.
And that train would have been the last one through.
It,
you feel?
Well, it must have been one of the last coming through. Yes, coming right through.
That scene at Liverpool Street with all the Jewish people waiting.
Yeah. It was, the platform was absolutely packed. It was about 3:30 on a Friday morning. I know it must have been Friday, I think it must have been a Friday. It was about two, three days before the actual declaration of war. And that Liverpool Street Station, which is not a cheerful place at the best of times, and that night,
If I could go back now,
yeah.
To you're still at school at the Godolphin,
yeah.
And how it was that you went into horticulture.
Yes. That was.
You were saying about your early farm experience. Was that at all influential?
I don't know that it was influential, but it was all part of the background, and chiefly because the summers always seem to be so hot and so fine. One never remembers the rain, and it must have rained, but one always looked back and the skies were blue and the sun was shining. I was very glad I had that little bit on that farm anyway, because it came in useful later. But when I was at school, I wasn't an awful lot of use to anybody, I don't think. I played lacrosse for the school. But even that went wrong, because the whole time I was at school, I only won one thing that I would have to go up onto the platform in hall for, and that was my lacrosse pin. And the year that I got it, just before the end of the term, my brother got chicken pox and I was at home, and they sent me my pin by post. And I never, I suppose I did forgive my brother for that, but especially as he got chicken pox very poorly and I got it very badly. I enjoyed school. I've still got school friends. Three of us are going off on a holiday this summer together. And I go and stay with them and they come and stay with me. So school was all right. But I wanted to teach English and I wanted to go to Oxford. And finally to teach English. I took school certificates, as it was in those days, and I did quite all right in everything except Latin. We had a Latin mistress who was the absolute end. She was so sarcastic, it just wasn't true. I used to curl up every time she looked at me, and I did not get a credit in Latin. I passed, but I didn't get a credit, so I took it again at Christmas, and I still didn't get a credit. So obviously I wasn't going to be able to do what I wanted to do. So my father said, well, what are you going to do? So I said, well, I think I'd better do gardening. Well, we'd done gardening at school. We had a teacher at school who did home economics and gardening. Well, my father took me into the home economics class on one occasion because my mother had died and I was looking after the family. And he said, you better go and do some cookery at school. Well, I'd been running the house for about 3 years, and we spent an hour and a half making a rice pudding. So I went back to my father and said, that's the end of that. And the gardening that we did at school was piddling. We all had little beds, and we did little bits of this and little bits of that and little bits of something else. And I mean, it just... So I didn't do gardening at school. It wasn't my line at all. But then, when it was the question of what was I going to do, I said, well, gardening. So, and the headmistress was one of the real old school of headmistresses. She was isolated on a pillar apart. And I mean, she was a very good headmistress. I'm not running her down as headmistress, but she was not what you might call part of us. And we went in, and my father explained with some wrath that her teachers hadn't been able to get me my Latin. And he said, so Marla wants to take up gardening. And I can still remember her expression. She looked down her nose and she said, but Mr. Williams, you do realise, don't you, that if Viola does gardening, she would never earn more than 30 shillings a week in her life. That was the end. My father stormed out. And we got in touch with the agricultural organiser of Wilts County Council. And he came down to see us, and he was an absolute poppet. His name was Bill Price, and I knew him right up until the time he died, because he really was. He was a what I would call a nice man. And he said he saw no... My father said he couldn't pay for me to go to Reading because he'd still got my brother to cope with. And so Bill said, well, she can probably get a grant from Wiltshire. He said, I can see about that. But she'll have to prove before she gets a grant that she's serious about it. And so he said, I'll if you really want to, I'll introduce you to Wilton Park Gardens, where he knew the head and head gardener, and she can go there for a year, and if she's satisfactory, we'll get her a grant to go to Reading. And so I went to Wilton Park, which in those days was divided into the kitchen side of it, which was an enormous walled affair, a real old-fashioned walled affair, and the pleasure grounds, and there were two people who were head of each department, and I went into the general one, the walled garden, and I've been so grateful for having had a chance to be part of the pre-war stately garden vegetable fruit side, because it was something which went completely west during war, and I've been so grateful for that year. Bill was quite right that he didn't know what was going to happen, but it was a wonderful year. We did everything more or less according to how it had been done 50 years, 100 years before. We had vineries, we had fruit, peaches and nectarines and pears all around the walls. We had soft fruit. We had tomato houses, cucumber houses, all specialised things. And a wonderful fruit store which was underground, and a marvellous mushroom shed that was miles long, which grew mushrooms. And then we had all the flower stuff, all the sort of stuff that we grew for the house, to go into the house. And it was a wonderful year. I learnt so much there. And I was so grateful that I'd done that before I went to Reading, because it made all the difference when I got up to Reading.
How usual would it have been then for a young woman to have gone into gardening, someone of your background?
I would say pretty rare. There were, I forget how many women there were on our course, but we had about 24 on the course, I think, and I think there were 6 or 7 women. It certainly wasn't a common thing for somebody from a school like mine to do it. But the interesting part was that I didn't stay for the 6th year in the school, but by the time I went to college, my year had caught up with me, so we all went up to various universities and colleges at the same time, so that we never really broke sort of continuity, which was rather nice.
Well, while you were working at Wilton, did they give you any pay?
No. I started by cycling over there, but that was 8 miles, and in the winter that wasn't funny. So my father coughed up for a season ticket on the bus, and so I went by bus, but I didn't get paid. I don't think it ever occurred to any of us that we wanted paying. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I was learning, but I pulled my weight.
Were you the only woman in the Wilton?
No, we had a woman in the packing shed. I think her name was Mrs. Harris. She was in the packing shed, but otherwise I was the only woman, and they just moved me round wherever there was a sort of thing that wanted doing. If the pots wanted washing, I went and washed pots. And if the snowdrops wanted picking, I went and picked snowdrops. And just whatever. Given their due, the staff, there must have been about 9 or 10 staff, and given their due, they just accepted me. There was never any sort of feeling about it at all. And largely, I think, because one of the first jobs I did, apart from my father, the first time my father came over to pick me up the first day I went there, and he found me up to my neck in manure, patting manure down in the mushroom beds. And I think my father thought that was the absolute end. And it nearly finished him off, I think. But the next job I did was with George, who was the chap who was responsible for all the fruit. And he was a very nice man. And he, I think, sort of indoctrinated the rest into me. And I never had any trouble with any of the men there. We did anything that we had spare, went up to Birmingham. Anything in the way of fruit or flowers. The snowdrops all went to Birmingham. We used to go into the main grounds and pick snowdrops. 19 snowdrops and 3 ivy leaves to a bunch. It's it lasted. But it was a long period, the snowdrop period, because we went from sort of thin ones right up to the very big double ones. And they were all over the grounds in the wild apart. So that was fun. And
when one looks at the sort of garden centres today, you know, all the different clothing and shoes that one can buy, I wonder, was it very different then? You know, how did you, what would you have worn when you went on the land, first of all?
I wore a pinny. I've got a picture of it somewhere. I don't know where I've put that. But I've got a picture of me with George somewhere. With a pinny. A long pinny. And I think I wore that pattern the whole time I was there. And certainly there was no question of trousers. I mean, it was skoits. And pretty hefty shoes. And otherwise, I suppose one wore a Macintosh if you had to, if it was raining, and we did things in the rain. But you just, everybody just wore their ordinary clothes. There was no question. Actually, it was one of the things I had problems with when I went to Reading, because I didn't like trousers. And when we went up for practical work up to Shinfield, we were supposed to wear trousers of some sort or another, and I just insisted on wearing a skirt. And I had terrible trouble with them for a long time. I think that was a very good apprenticeship. There was no doubt about it. And it meant I lived at home, which meant my father was very much involved in community activities. By that time, I'd got a stepmother. And they were both involved in community. And so when I was at home, I was also equally involved in community activities. And I suppose it's something which has lasted ever since. I mean, my mother... I can just remember when I was four, my mother taking me down to the local flower show with a jam jar and a bunch of wild flowers for the kids' classes. And I think probably community sort of started there, and it's always been community.
So going to Reading, what sort of course was that?
That was a diploma course. It was a 2-year diploma course. I wanted, the degree course was 3 years, and I wanted to get out and earn something as quickly as I could. And I've regretted ever since that I didn't take a degree. I regret it today that I didn't take a degree. It hadn't hampered me in what I'd done, but it's hampered me in what I would like to have done. Because I wanted to get on to FAO of the UN, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, and they wouldn't look at me because I haven't got a degree. And I've always regretted that, because I would like to have done that. But there it was, it wasn't to be. And the 2-year course was a very good, very good practical course. We had an excellent foreman up at the practical place. We had a very good practical instructor, Mr. Cook, who was excellent. We had a very nasty little man who was very good. As one of the main lecturers, and I was lucky because I had to earn a little bit of money while I was at Reading. The pocket money wasn't all that much, and Cook took me on to look after his garden, and he paid me for that. And then he took me on to his team that went up to Chelsea. There were three of us that used to go up to Chelsea with Cook, and because he was propagating Bishop of Llandaff dahlias with the dark leaves and the bright scarlet flowers, and that was his thing. And we used to go up and stage that for him up at Chelsea, which was always fun. And we had a professor who we never saw at all, I think he occasionally gave us a lecture, but he was much more interested in the school people. And we had a very, very nice woman who did the botany with us, did botany, and I think she must have done biology as well, but anyway, she did that side of it, Dr. Hole, and she was, again, a very nice woman and very helpful. And I had 2 good years there. I can't remember how many plays I did with the drama, with the college, with the university drama and the hall drama. I played hockey, netball and swam for hall, and I played cricket and lacrosse for university, and I got my blue for lacrosse, and so that side of it was all right. At the same time, I was very lucky in that I made friends with a girl who is not in our hall, but we met, and we used to do one of the agricultural, I think it must have been A.B. Kenny or something, we did together, the agricultural students, the dairy students and the horticultural students all did one of the subjects together. And I met her at that, and she was the daughter of a Danish millionaire, an oil magnate. And she and I clicked, and although she left, she only stayed a year, but we kept up for a long time, even after the war. And she had a 20-34 horsepower sports car. I mean, it was something that was just out of this world. And I used to go everywhere with her. We went to the Bath and West, we went to Ascot, we went to Wimbledon, we did a lot. And one Easter, I went to stay with her family for the Easter. They lived up in Aylesbury or somewhere. And my family had gone to the sea for the day from Salisbury on Easter Monday. And she took me back in the morning. She drove me back down there, and she was going to go back again in the afternoon. And we came up to a crossroads that I'd known all my life, and I said, "Joan, be very careful when you come to this crossroads, because it's a very nasty crossroads." So she went right down into second or even bottom. And as we went over the crossroads, and Austin 7, with Grandma, the dog, and all the children and everything else, put his foot on the accelerator and hit us amidships. He hit us so hard that he bent the chassis, and you don't do that of a Railton sort of without some. Joan was knocked out. The family all had hysterics. We blocked up the road. I was bleeding profusely, but was the only one who appeared to have any sort of sense of doing anything about anything. So I found the next motorist that came along, and we got the Austin off the main road, off the road, so that the traffic could go by. I sent a message to my doctor, who was about 15 miles away. A message also went to the military hospital, which was the nearest one to us, to the accident. And we all got taken to the military hospital on a bank holiday Monday, when there was one rather pathetic little orderly on hand who hadn't even got any safety pins. And he patched us up as best he could. And meanwhile, the message had got through to my doctor, who was a friend of the family, and he said, "What car was it?" And was told that it was a Railton. He said, "Well, that's not my Viola." And then he thought, "Oh, well, I wonder." So anyway, he came and he rescued us, which was very nice. And he patched Joan up, and I put her to bed, and rang up her family. And in due course, a chauffeur came down and picked her up. And by the time she'd gone, I realised that there was something more than just blood wrong with me. And I'd done several ribs in. And so when I went back to Reading, this is all relevant, when I went back to Reading, I couldn't play cricket. And so I swatted. And it was the alternative. I came out of Plaster on a Friday. I played a cricket match in Bristol on a Saturday. And on the Sunday, somebody poured boiling mushroom soup over my left arm. So I couldn't play cricket for the rest of the summer.